And then the Bhagavatam, if I have time. I don't want to make the same mistake I made last time, that I didn't get time to glorify Devananda Pandit. But I was saved from that great offense by your Guru Maharaj, who the next day glorified Devananda Pandit in an unprecedented way. So I was fortunate because I was feeling very bad about that. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tata. Therefore, into a plenary portion, and thus advent myself in the womb of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Purport. This is an example of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is one without a second, he expands himself by shramsa, his personal expansion, and sometimes by vibhinamsa, or a separated expansion. Lord Vishnu herein agrees to send his personal expansion as the son of Meru Devi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, who is the son of Agnidra. The Ritvija, the priests, knew that God is one, yet they prayed for the Supreme Lord to become the son of Maharaj Nabi to let the world know that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is one without a second. When he incarnates, he expands himself in different potencies. So we know that Narottam Bhakti Vinod says, Madhava Titi Bhakti Janani, that the days of Lord Hari and Akadasi, Bhakti Janani, like a mother gives birth to a child, the observance of these days gives birth to devotion within our heart. And the days of Lord Hari also include the days of his great devotees. And a Vaishnava becomes very joyful on these days. It's just like a mother, when the mother loves the child and the child has a birthday, then the family becomes very, very happy. So similarly, a Vaishnava on the days of Lord Hari, he becomes very, very happy. He becomes very, very happy. And it's a wonderful time for advancement. One of my godbrothers, I don't know if you've had the fortune to have his association. He's a very, very great preacher in the Krishna consciousness movement and a very, very deep devotee. His name is Partha Sarathi Prabhu. He's very ill, so he doesn't come around so much. He has to take care of his health. But he has very deep, deep realizations. And one day in Govardhan, I stay for a month or 6 weeks every year at our Bhaktivedanta ashram. And it's nice for association, and he was staying there. And sometimes I would see him in the evening walking on the roof, because the whole day was spent in personal chanting and hearing. And he shared a very... Is there something wrong with the mic? It's inconsistent. What? Can you hear me without a mic? What? Oh. Can everyone in Bombay hear me without a mic? This is in the previous days. You know, they had that karma, the great speakers. It was almost, they had a microphone in their throat. So I also can speak very loudly. Okay. Haribo, how are we doing now? Somewhat better? I think it's okay. So he shared with me a very wonderful realization. It's a component of how we advance in devotional service. And it's a personal realization. He was chanting and hearing about Krishna, and I remembered it almost as like a sutra, a mantra. He said, we advance by mercy. This is the process of bhakti. Even we make an effort, but it's mercy. Because in a relationship, I'm not even saying the whole mantra, I'm just explaining the parts. But the first part is, we advance by mercy. So, how, why? Because... Haribo. We advance by mercy. Why? Because in a relationship with a superior, his love for you is called mercy or affection. It's actually called anugraha. The love of a superior for a subordinate is technically called anugraha. That's the flavor of love. And when it's in relationship to a superior, that love often manifests in terms of instructions and teachings. So respect goes upwards in a relationship, and affection or mercy goes down. So our advancement in spiritual life is very, very much dependent on mercy. Even if we're practicing, it's not by practice alone. The practice creates the consciousness which attracts mercy. If someone is charitable, he will give that charity to someone who is in need. So the process of bhakti is to create, and our sadhana, our practice, is to purify our heart and create in us the realization of our need for the mercy of Krishna. And when we practice Krishna consciousness in that mood of need, then that mood creates a receptacle that attracts mercy. So what Parthasarathi Prabhu told me is, is we advance by mercy. And we know, then he said, and that mercy comes from the great souls. Because we know the Supreme Lord's Kripa Shakti is in the hearts of his devotees. So we advance by mercy. That mercy comes from the great souls. And then the last thing he said is so nice. He said that conduit for mercy, the channel for mercy, is our worship, service, and glorification of them. So this is a very, very important practice of devotional service. And it's why we have the names and we mark the appearance and disappearance of the great souls. Because their mercy is available by our worship and glorification of them. This is so important in our spiritual life to honor them and remember them. So today is the disappearance of Srila Jiva Goswami, who Srila Prabhupada called the greatest philosopher of Krishna consciousness. And he, more than any other teacher in our line, systematized the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I think more than anybody in our line, he's responsible for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He codified the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm not sure, but I'm not even sure before him exactly what our tilak looked like. And we were chanting the Sadgoswami Astakam. And this is a very, very wonderful way to remember these great souls. This song should be, as Vaishnavas, it should be our mission statement. This is what our objective is, to develop these wonderful qualities. And in a personal way, in my own spiritual life, I chant this song. And in chanting this song, I try to remember different of the six Goswamis. Although they all exemplify all these qualities mentioned in these verses, Krishna Kirtana Gananartanapano Premamritam Bho Nidhi, that they loudly chanted enthusiastically, Ut Kirtan, loud kirtan, enthusiastic kirtan. Srila Jiva Goswami himself in the Sri Bhakti Sandarbha quotes verses to mention that loud chanting is actually better than soft chanting. So they chant loud kirtan, and therefore they were immersed in an ocean of praying. Ut means throat, just like utkanta means enthusiastic. Why? Because ut means to stretch and kanta means the neck. So the best example of enthusiasm is the bird, which is stretching for its food. It extends its neck. It has so much eagerness to get that. So that's our loud, enthusiastic kirtan. But of all the qualities of the six Goswamis, and they all did this, but I would say that the second verse exemplifies, before I even say that, just imagine the quality of a soul to have uncle Sri Rupa Goswami, uncle Sri Sanatan Goswami. Just imagine
the mercy of Krishna to be born in such a family. And what to speak of his father, the brother of Rupa and Sanatan, Anupam, who had the personal association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But this verse, Nana Shastra Vacharanaika Nipano, he scrutinizingly studied all varieties of Shastra, but for a reason. Nana Shastra Vacharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako, to establish the true religion, the true activities. The Shastra is like a vat, like just like there's, the Shastra is not enough. Acharya Purusho Veda. Acharya Purusho Veda, that the Shastra becomes revealed by the Acharya. And therefore, to make the Shastra relevant, the great Acharya, the great teacher, has to understand the condition of the people of the time. And the example I thought of was of a pharmacist. He has so many medicines. And then you have the person who's coming into the pharmacy. But you need the doctor. And what does the doctor do? He negotiates between the stock of medicine and the condition of the patient. And then selects what is appropriate according to that person's condition. And therefore, the great Acharya, he looks at the Vedic Shastra. And therefore he emphasizes and selects and then outlines what is the best method for the people at that particular time. We know in different yugas, there are different recommendations. There's different yuga dharma. And even in particular yugas, although there's one process, how to practice that process and how to establish it. And not only that, how to authorize it. Because everything in spiritual life is conviction, faith. And faith means faith that faith means faith in the Shastra, in the words of God as it's coming down in parampara. We have to have conviction. Just ourselves. Someone may tell us something, or there may be a philosophical point. But before we embrace that point and apply it, we want to know that it's authorized. And therefore we want to know that this comes from Guru. This comes from Srila Prabhupada. And why do we have faith in Srila Prabhupada? We have faith in Srila Prabhupada because we know that he exemplifies and embodies the Shastra. So Srila Jiva Goswami, based on the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he established the authenticity. Not that it wasn't authentic, but he established it for people to see on the basis of Shastra. Nana Shastra, Vacharanaika, scrutinizingly studying all the Shastra. Sadharma Samstapako, to establish the conclusions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lokanam Hitakarano, and therefore he did good. Hitakarano. Hita means welfare. Lokanam, for all the people in the world. Lokanam hitakarano, tribhuvane, manyo sharanya karo, and therefore he was worthy of taking shelter of. So he performed this as a service for his spiritual master. I believe he was initiated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Of course, Sanatan Goswami, his other uncle, was the siksha, was the guru of all the six Goswamis. And therefore, he composed 400,000 verses. We can imagine the Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. 400,000 verses to establish the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so wonderful. I remember I saw this translation of his Harinam Amrita Vyakaran. Very beautiful. I wish I could mention the... He wanted to save people from the desert of grammar. He had very beautiful how he put that, the desert of grammar. So many dry rules. Imagine if so many dry rules. And therefore his grammar, the way he composed it, that every rule was a name and pastime of Krishna. For example, the short vowels were called what? Does anybody know? The short vowels, a, e, u. They were called Vamana. Because Vamana was a dwarf. And what were the long vowels called? Trivikram. Because he took three steps and covered the universe. So that way you're studying, and the ten vowels are called Das Avatar, and then there's things where you take off one vowel, Krishna loses his flute, and that's a Venu, and he just did this wonderful thing so that people study the grammar. Rather than the dry grammar, they're immersed in the qualities and pastimes of Krishna. He was so a genius. And so many books he wrote, and he was humble. He was humble, because without humility, you actually cannot realize anything. I was mentioning before that one thing Jiva Goswami said, and he was discussing Sadhu Sangha. And when he was discussing Sadhu Sangha, he made the point that it's so powerful. And there's three things involved. There's the power of the sadhu, there's the mercy of the sadhu, and then there's our own qualification. And he said, even if we don't have awareness of the sadhu, of his position, still we'll receive benefit. The sadhu is so powerful. But he said, except... I mentioned this when Maharaj asked me to make some comment after class. He said, except one person. I think the Sanskrit literally says, one who has little knowledge and he's proud. I can see that actually. That someone may have knowledge and may know scholarship, etc. But if he does not have guru nishta, which means he's cultivating the mood of a servant. And if you're not in the mood of a servant, then anything that comes to you, you will use for yourself. And therefore that knowledge will make you proud. And if you're proud, then you won't be able to hear. And that's the main benefit you get from a sadhu. So Jiva Goswami, although there are stories, I suspect that someone of that incredible, he studied His life was meant for annunciation. And I think if you check the dates where his father died, it was shortly after his birth. His mother also died when he was a young man. He was inspired by his uncles, Rupin Sanatan, and therefore he desired to dedicate his life to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see these great souls. He went to Navadvip, got the blessings of Nityananda Prabhu, who took him on parikram to all the holy places. In Vrindavan, he met Vishnupriya and went on his way to Vrindavan to study with the disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Madhusudana Vachaspati. And he became such a unparalleled scholar that even to this day, there's a department to study Srila Jiva Goswami at Benares Hindu University, which is the, at least in the modern sense, the main center of learning for Hindu studies. So he had that wealth and depth of knowledge. But he wasn't just a scholar. Sometimes people have a misconception of the six Goswamis, that they were simply chanting and meditating all day on their Manjari Sarup. When Jiva Goswami, when they came to Vrindavan, what was Vrindavan? Vrindavan was a jungle. How were the temples built? Roads had to be built for the bullock carts to come in. And where did he get that vast library of books? It wasn't in Vrindavan at the time. He had to collect them. They had to be shipped in. They were in the mood of service. And as a service, I remember when I first was making a decision whether I should take disciples or not, and seeing my lack of qualification, I consulted one senior Vaishnav, and his advice was very, very nice. He said, it was nice of us, if I can remember it, he said, don't think yourself guru, but as a service to your spiritual master. So Jiva Goswami was not thinking, I am scholar. He was thinking, I am servant of my spiritual master, and this is what I have to offer to him. And he was very humble, but I can imagine due to the vast learning that he had. I'm amazed when right now I'm studying the Bhakti Sandarbha, how he quotes the Bhagavatam and so many verses. But he was humble. In the very beginning of the Bhakti Sandarbha, initially the Bhakti Sandarbha was a loose compilation of ideas and notes and references by Srila Gopal Bhatta. And then Jiva Goswami compiled it and systematized it. And at the beginning of every essay in the Bhakti Sandarbha, all the essays of the Bhakti Sandarbha, he composes a very nice prayer in a heartfelt way, who's saying that I am doing this only for the pleasure of Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. That's Vaishnava. Vaishnava means the consciousness is for the pleasure of others. He said, I'm only doing this. And therefore he was qualified to understand bhakti. And very beautiful in his poetry, he said, this is written by Jivaka. And jiva means living entity. And ka means diminutive, means very tiny. Like if you say bala, that means boy. If you say balaka, that means very small boy. So he said, this is only done for the pleasure of Rupa and Sanatan by jivaka, the most insignificant living entity. And only in that consciousness can one be empowered with the mercy to not only compile such a significant shastra, but to compile it with the proper realization and meaning. Although, as I said, you can imagine in the competitive material world, especially in that type of culture, once you get into the world of scholarship, and some people use their scholarship like anybody would use anything else to rise above others, because knowledge is power. So in the world, which is basically the whole impetus of the world, is envy. We discussed that verse, the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavo Paramo Namatsaranam Satam, that this book is for devotees who are non-envious, which envious means they're not competing. That's the basic material consciousness, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. How is this world born? Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. This icha, this material desire, I want to be the controller and the enjoyer. And this dvesha, if I want to be the enjoyer and controller, if that is my desire, I don't desire anyone else to be better than me. I desire them to be less than me. And that's my prayer. And that's what material consciousness means, fruit of activity means. I want to move up to be the enjoyer and the controller. So you can imagine in the world how a scholar of that caliber becomes a lightning rod for envy. And therefore, as Prabhupada discusses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there were always false accusations against them. Some which have absolutely no substantiation whatsoever. Like they said, he was envious of Krishna Das Kavirajan through the Chaitanya Charitamrita into the... So many envious. But there is one story, and we know in the days of the glory of India, that powerful scholars were so revered, and they would sometimes try to conquer others, like Keshava Kashmiri, who became Digvijay. He conquered all the directions, of course, until he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and such a wonderful story. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Shruti Dara, which means he could, literally it means to hold with your ears. They can remember things just by hearing once, they would retain it. Which is why previously there were no books. It wasn't a symptom that people were illiterate. It was a symptom that they were so elevated in their consciousness, by hearing once, they can remember everything. So what a wonderful scene to demonstrate the opulence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's learning with this great, proud pandit who is so learned. And then they have their fight. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu puts down the gauntlet. You compose 100 verses
on the Ganges. And like the blowing of the wind, and this is Sanskrit, there's so many rules. It's not free verse. It has to be perfectly composed. We know that Srila Swarup Damodar used to check all the literature that would come for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that there was no minor defect in it. Because if there's a minor defect in poetry, the whole nature of poetry is that it not only explains a particular emotion, but it embodies a particular emotion. So that if you hear the poetry, you'll actually experience that emotion. And therefore it's used in the bhakti tradition. The great Vaishnav poets, they're able to encapsulate a particular mood and convey that to you. Just like if it's the disappearance day of a great acharya, and Narottam Das Thakur put his mood of separation for Srinivas Acharya into poetry. Not just explaining that this is separation, but in a way that the whole mood is in his song. Yeyani lo prema dana karuna prachur. Even hearing the sound vibration. So it has to be perfect. And if it's not perfect, one who is rasika or cultured will not appreciate. It's like a drama. If someone knows drama, you cannot put on just any show. It has to have some quality. So he composed 100 verses like the blowing of the wind. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is such a great scholar that he was able to not only memorize each verse, but find out the minor literary discrepancies. Like, he needed a word for Lord Shiva. So he said, Bhavani Bhartu, the husband of the wife of Lord Shiva. So it seems, in a technical way, Lord Shiva is the husband of the wife, no, the husband of the wife of, okay, help me now, I'm lost. The husband of the wife, what? The husband of the wife of Lord Shiva. The husband of the wife of, in a technical way, it may seem that the wife of Lord Shiva has another husband. Very technical. And he pointed out those minor discrepancies. So Jiva Goswami was such a powerful scholar and the greatest scholar of the time called, I think it was Rup Narayan. He came, and there's a famous story where he came and he, Rupa and Sanatan, very, very humble, he wanted to challenge them. And they're so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, they have no time for any ego endeavor. No time for any such endeavor. They just, and he wanted a Jayapatra, you signed the paper he signed. Doesn't want to bother. But when Jiva came, and he tried to challenge Jiva, and Jiva found out that he was bragging that he had defeated his gurus. Sri Jiva defeated him. And then his guru Rupa chastised him that you should follow our example of humility. And then he actually, for some time, the chastisement was so heavy that he had to take He went to Mathura because their sincerity. When one has conviction in a spiritual authority, whatever that spiritual authority says, he takes it deeply into the heart. So he took it deeply into the heart.
that I have made some mistake, and began to fast and undergo austerities and repent. And then Sanatan instructed Rupa that you're a very learned scholar, but why have you done this to him? It indicates that you have not studied our teachings carefully. You study our teachings and see what mistake you made. So Rupa was thinking, what have I done wrong? He has exhibited some pride. I am his guru. Sadhu means to cut the false ego. The first thing, maybe Rupa was thinking, the first thing that's said in the Bhagavad Gita, as soon as Arjuna accepts Krishna as guru, the first thing the spiritual master does is to try to remove the false ego. And the first thing that Krishna said to Arjuna is, although you are speaking learned words, you're a fool. Because the wise lament neither for the living or the dead. Asochanam vasochastvam pragyavadam chabhasasam katasam agatasam nana socha. You think you're a pandit, but you're not. So what have I done wrong? Even if it's just a little bit pride, this is my duty. First duty of the spiritual master is to remove the bodily concept of life. And how do you remove the bodily concept of life? You may have to chastise. This is your body? Well, it's not so good. And this is why. But then he looked, and what word did he find? The teachings? Jivadoy. Just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jivadoy Krishna Nam Sarva Dharma Sar. That the essence of all religion is to show mercy to the living entity. The essence of all religion. There's Daya and there's Kripa. Kripa means mercy, but it's directed to an individual. Guru Kripa. Guru Kripa means a particular individual has got the mercy of the spiritual master. But Dai means for everyone. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Koro More. He has mercy for everyone. So he understood this. So today is very auspicious day. I could say somewhat more, but it's getting late. Especially talking about his contribution of the Sandarbhas and Gopal Champu, which is perhaps after the Bhagavatam the greatest treatise of the pastimes of Krishna. It's his commentary on the 10th canto. And what to speak of the Satsandarbhas, where on the authority of the Bhagavatam he establishes the philosophy of Krishna consciousness based on the Bhagavatam. I'll just explain just one verse that Jiva Goswami explained, and then I'll end the class, which I was appreciating. He has so many wonderful ways of... So he's talking about the glories of hearing, how exalted is the power. And hearing means to contact with the ear the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. Very nice when he discusses this, though, and it's very edifying to me. Sometimes I describe, I'm very unfortunate, my faith is not simple. I've got this complicated mind. So I need to see, oh, this is said. So many things that Prabhupada was teaching and exemplifying. I'm reading in the Sandarbhas and I'm seeing, oh, Prabhupada has read this book inside and out. I just remember I shared with you that one point that I thought was so wonderful before, where he's talking about Guru Tattva. And he's speaking about the verse, Yasya Deve Para Bhaktiya Tata Deve Tata Guru. That one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and the supreme Lord, the imports of the Vedas are realized. And he's using that verse, why? Because what is this implicit faith in the spiritual master? It means I am going to accept his authority in my life completely. I am going to be his humble servant. So he's saying, unless you become a humble servant, you cannot realize the import of the Vedas. Because what's the import of the Vedas? It's liberation. Liberation from what? False ego. That's what the Vedas are about. So unless you approach the Vedas with a preliminary realization that I am the servant, then how will you understand what it's talking about? And we see that exemplified so many times with people who know so many verses, but they're not humble. They don't have that Guru Nishtha. They haven't accepted with faith the authority of the Supreme Lord through the Guru Parampara in their life. And we see what happens. They know the verses. They know the stories. But they don't understand the import or the meaning. And what did Srila Prabhupada stress in spiritual life? Really, really stress Guru Nishtha. Accepting with full faith the teachings of the spiritual master as coming in the parampara and having that authority. That's what humility means, actually. Humility means accepting another authority to rule your life besides your own ego and material desires. And then when he's discussing hearing, he makes it clear. He's talking about hearing, and he said there's the name, form, quality, and pastimes. And he said you can hear them in any order and get perfection, but the method is first hearing the name. And by hearing the name, you become purified to hear the form. And by realizing the form, you can understand the qualities. And by understanding the qualities, then you can understand the pastimes. So clear how Prabhupada is giving us the teaching. And there was one other verse in hearing, because I was studying that section. It was so wonderful. He was giving that example from the beginning of the 10th canto, where that verse is Nivritatai Shir Upagiyamanat, where it describes that there are four types of people, but only one type of people can desist from hearing the pastimes of Krishna, which are so attractive. So there are four types of people. Nivritatai Shir, one who is already liberated. Then there's one who's desiring liberation. Then there's one who's desiring to enjoy. And then there's one who's pashugya, the killer of animals. So he explains that this verse says only the killer of animals can desist, will not be attracted to hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And he explains why, and it's a very beautiful thing. He said this, it doesn't just mean the killer of the animals, Sri Jiva says. It indicates a particular mentality in a person that prevents him from appreciating. And he said, of course the hunter, but what is it about the hunter? It means that the material qualities, the envy, the core material qualities has manifest so much that they've come out in the form of violence. To such an extent that there's a beautiful deer in Vrindavan, that the doe-eyed deers, they give Krishna pleasure just by the beauty of their glances. But he's killing. He's not seeing how beautiful this deer is. He's become insensitive. So this pashugya indicates when one's material qualities have come out in such a way that they harm others, you will become insensitive to something even as beautiful as the pastimes of Krishna. And he also mentions, it also indicates when the envy comes out of the heart in terms of criticism. And he said, criticism is worse than envy. Because envy is when it's in the heart, and criticism is when that envy comes out. So see his how he analyzes this verse and other verses. And we are so fortunate that we are connected in Gurukul Parampara from Sri Jiva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, who perfectly exemplifies his teachings in sometimes a very clear and simple way, stressing the points of our predecessor acharyas. So I'll end now. Any questions? Okay, it's 9:15. It's late. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Jiva Goswami ki, Go Premanandi.